Hello and welcome to CIFAR Sounding. I'm your host, Simba Wiltz.
And I'm Asla Gonser.
CIFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of the big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CIFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
You can find out more about us on our website at cflar.org.
We're also on social media. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/cflar and on Twitter at cflarbigcats.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/CFL Animal Reserve.
Our conversation continues this week with Dr. Rajesh Gopal, Secretary General of the Global Tiger Forum. Dr. Gopal has worked in tiger conservation for over 37 years, and he is one of the principal investigators in the recent census that showed an over 30% rise in the number of wild tigers in India. In previous discussion, we have talked about the study and its execution, as well as the actions being taken by the Indian government to protect the precious wildlife corridors sustaining this tiger population. Our interview begins this week with questions of tigers in captivity and how to best benefit wild populations. Dr. Gopal is speaking to us via phone from his office in New Delhi.
We have a unique challenge in the United States because it's been reported that there are more tigers in this country than there are left in the wild. And our tigers that are here are not likely to ever be able to be rewilded. So it's a huge challenge for us because we are now starting to get onto the reality that we've inherited this problem and we have to find viable ways of keeping our population safe and secure. What advice do you give to us that, you know, we have 31 tigers, for example? What do we do to try to make sure that we can both stay true to the animal, but also be a positive influence?
These 10 tigers are the menagerie ones. I'm aware of this. More than one estimate some few years back was around 7,000 tigers. But then there are varied estimates, and if you see the Google and see the web, a lot of figures appear. People do catch them and they are there, and few years back, a lot of tigers were shot also in some ranch or somewhere. And the Global Tiger Forum had sent a letter to the U.S. Political head some time back, a few years back, to intervene.
So at this point, Dr. Gopal was mentioning that there are areas in the U.S. where tigers are shot on ranches?
Well, this is the infamous canned hunt that many people have heard about, but few ever really seem to be able to put a finger on. There are, of course, captive tigers in the United States, and even as our most recent research has revealed that there are less tigers than in the wild that are known by the USDA, that means that all those other tigers have gone somewhere else, and they are either passed away or they are not being recorded, and it's this specter of the tigers that aren't being recorded that is being raised here with the possibility of them going to these secret facilities and places whereby they can be hunted and taken as trophies.
Now, that has to be illegal.
It is illegal. It's very much illegal. Even within the country, our own Endangered Species Act would find this to be a terrible offense. It's a federal crime as well as an international crime, not to mention just being something that is really reprehensible, even to the sport of hunting. Any true hunter will tell you that it's a sport, and a sporting chance is central to the idea of hunting. For someone to take an animal and put them in a small enclosure whereby the chance of a kill is 100% takes the sport out of it and lends it a lot more to more of a ritualized murder.
So Dr. Gopal also mentioned a number of 7,000 tigers, and I'm assuming he meant in the U.S.?
Well, he said menagerie tigers, so he may mean in the U.S., he may mean other places, but unlike his numbers, which are oftentimes extrapolated from a lot of research, our numbers that we have for big cats in the U.S. don't have the same degree of fidelity. We are not sure how many tigers we have in the country, and the only counts that we truly have are for those that have voluntarily chosen to be regulated. So the numbers he's quoting are as much of a rumor to him as the original number of what the count in the wild is to us.
So when we count our tigers, of course, it's just the ones that are in captivity. So we don't know the true number because some people are hiding their tigers, is what you're saying.
Well, not the ones in captivity as much as the ones that are being regulated by a governmental entity, usually the USDA.
So are we saying that the ones that are outside the law are not being counted, but the ones inside the law that are legal tigers are being counted?
Well, no. In those states that it is allowed to have big cats without licensure or without requiring USDA permitting, those individuals and those cats would not be counted, but the people who have them could be operating entirely within the scope of the law and may actually be quite good at taking care of their animals.
Well, this is a big issue. Number one, it's easy to pet them when they are young. They look very cute and cuddling and all that. But then to rear them in captivity is the biggest challenge. So people should be discouraged from rearing these carnivores. But what to do with those which you already have? So one option can be that they can be sterilized and then they can be put in the safaris, in situ safaris. That will be a very popular, that's a big popular thing in India. For the lions, somewhere in Gujarat, they have a safari. In near natural surroundings, you can have few. In U.S., there may be some wilderness, a lot of wilderness is there. In the states which are interested, these animals can be given to them. But to have them in private ranches and then to maintain them is going to be very, very difficult. We should discourage this. That's what I feel, because genetically, these tigers are swamped. They are from different origins. You can't reintroduce them or give to a tiger in country to rewild and put them back in the wild, because the genetic composition, some coming from circus, some coming from different zoos, different subspecies have been mated. So there is a problem there. So this is what I can think of. There's an issue. We have to manage the present population either with the option of putting them in safaris after due sterilization or and that's the only option. You have a lot of tigers in the zoos also. In India also there are plenty of, because the gestation is very short, as you know, 90 to 100 days, and they breed very well, and the postnatal survival is also good in the under captive conditions.
Over and over again, many times we'll get that question of why can't we send the cats back to the wild? And this is probably one of the most definitive answers that we really have gotten from someone who does work with the cats in the wild. All of the cats, especially in our country, do come from varied backgrounds, and regardless of how good their genetics may be, rewilding them all the way to India is fraught with problems that really emphasize the fact that this is a solution we have to come up with ourselves locally.
And of course, he's emphasizing the fact that once they're in captivity at this point, we don't have the option of rewilding, that of course we need to take care of them. And it's interesting how he mentions the idea of a safari to put sterilize the cats and put them in some situation like that.
Tends to be a very popular thing around the world, and in our country, because of the space issues, many times sanctuary is what takes place of these safaris. So instead of people driving through an area, they walk through an area. But this is not just a problem for the U.S., of course. We are not the only country with tigers. And in fact, as he mentions, we may not be the country with the most tigers in captivity.
problem in China is also having. They have more than 5,000 tigers in their captive farms, and they can't feed them. You can literally see these tigers begging for food. Some videos are there. It's pathetic to see it in the, on the website. So then somebody shouts and all these tigers go there and a piece of meat is thrown. And then they shoot these tigers also and they charge a fee. So these things should be discouraged, sir.
There are some surveys in this country that have shown that the tiger in 2008 was voted as a more popular animal than the dog. And there are lots of people, especially in this new burgeoning generation, that are interested in trying to link their activities to things that are going to provide benefit to the world. And one of the mechanisms that has been discussed is being able to create these opportunities for people to engage big cats in this country so that they can gain an appreciation for the challenges of big cats in other countries. In terms of doing that, I know the United States and various private entities in the United States have been large contributors to tiger conservation overseas. Do you see that trend as necessary in order to actually save the tiger, or is it something that you feel that the governments in India and the tiger holding countries will actually be able to sustain on their own?
Need much, because India has provided a lot of resources for these tigers from internal budgetary provision. India has standardized several things. But the other TRC, other countries like Laos, PDR, you have countries like Cambodia, you have countries like Vietnam, you have these some islands of Indonesia. They need all support. Some of them, somewhere you have some problem, but the thing is, everything is a sovereign issue for a range country. So, if they are interested, like in US, I had a very good experience last year. I was called to Clemson University. So we have an MOU with Clemson University. It was heartening to see the football happening and the Clemson Tigers and the tiger mascot getting a lot of, we saw tigers everywhere getting deflected. A lot of support, even our group of students from Clemson has come reaching India. So we'll be interacting with them. And with Virginia Tech also, we have a collaboration. So this kind of collaboration can be supported with students from tiger range countries, like group of students from Laos, from Vietnam. That is one thing. The second thing, what I think can happen is capacity building. Now, some institutes or small centers in these range countries can be identified, and they have their local protocols, but maybe they are given the state-of-the-art technology and resources, and those institutes can be treated as some center of excellence by an institute at the U.S., and they can handhold them through an MOU or a formal arrangement, and they can really help the TRC, those local countries, in training their frontline staff, building up their capability. The other thing is the technology part of it, like the protocol, the smart controls. They all need, you know, in US, in other East African countries, you have a lot of customized facility for a frontline staff. You can get the GIS, GPS readings, everything through your pad, and just plug into your computer, it gets uploaded. So no manual recording is required. So such facilities can be provided to these countries, and some of them do have, but some of them do not have. So these few things can happen. Then the interpretation, and that can happen in a big way. U.S. has got tremendous capability in path interpretation. Then the veterinary science and the ex-situ in-situ linkages, U.S. has got a lot of expertise in that. That can be imparted to these range countries. So a lot of things, I see a lot of chances, you know, scope for friendly collaboration with TRCs. So in a big way, a country like U.S., the organizations in U.S. can handhold them through their formal structure, or through bilaterals, or through informal organizations, or through intergovernmental organization like the one which I am there at present, the Global Tiger Forum. We now have signed an MOU with all these universities. So we can carry the us forward to these PRTs. So I see a lot of scope in this.
So here he mentions TRC. First of all, what is that?
Those are the Tiger Range countries. And so he's talking about using the GTF, the Global Tiger Forum, as an intermediary between these various institutions that may have information valuable to Tiger Range countries and those countries themselves.
Do you know a little bit about what GTF or the Global Tiger Forum does?
The Global Tiger Forum is a collection of the Tiger Range countries, so all the countries in which the tigers would have their native lands. And it's a collection of individuals and groups that exist entirely for the benefit of the tiger in the wild. And in spite of not really having the same kind of presence as a World Wildlife Fund kind of organization, the Global Tiger Forum has actually been around for quite some time. In fact, the first meeting of these countries took place in 1994, which has had all 11 Tiger Range states be present and start working through the process of how they are going to actually keep the wild tiger in their native habitats. And this really stemmed out of a recognition that a lot of these states have devoted substantial resources to trying to take care of tigers in their natural habit, but these are also states that have unique challenges which are going to have to be focused on in the states of tiger residents. So these TRCs are trying to band together to address between the 11 of them how they can solve the problem of the wild tiger in a very focused forum.
So it is really trying to bring together all of the people crossing the borders, crossing the cultural issues to come to a solution for the tigers on a worldwide scale instead of just calling it an Indian problem or a Chinese problem or a Russian problem.
Wow, excellent. And, you know, you mentioned some of the connections and whatnot. I know that in my career, I've certainly had a lot more focus on, say, for example, the pharmacology that has to do with tigers because people have tried to treat them as just big cats. And that's not always the case. There was an incident that took place where some of the tigers were being being captured using a drug called Tilazol, which I'm sure you're familiar with, which was actually recycling and causing tigers to actually die because of this. The development and use of medications customized to tigers seems to be one method that we can use to try and help help the humans who are engaging them in appropriate medical care. Is that something that that your office helps educate staff on and develops new methodologies with?
Can be taken forward. And also, I was reading you going through your profile, the canine distemper threat is always there for tigers also. So the kind of immunization belt, the buffers we need to create at the landscape level, I mean, some kind of collaboration can be thought of to help these countries, you know, including India on the front. Canine distemper is a big threat for in situ populations. Though I don't know, my domain is not veterinary or pharmacology domain, but I mean, one case came to light in one of the North Indian states of Uttar Pradesh 1.5 years back of testing positive for PD. Further, we couldn't hear anything, but we have alerted these states within our country, and through GTF, I have alerted the Tiger Range countries also. Russian Federation is doing something on this, but maybe with your expertise and your background, and we can get more help or inputs or insights and how to move forward on this, that can be worked out.
It sounded like Dr. Gopal just mentioned that tigers are found to have been infected with TB or tuberculosis.
The challenge of most of the cats in the wild is going to be that they are, of course, in a
bacteria-rich, infection-prone environment that they're not going to benefit from the same kind of medicine that you might have in an ex situ situation. So the idea of using the information that we've gathered in how to treat the big cats in captivity and coming up with new and novel solutions that we can feed back to them is not only an exciting prospect, but does provide a viable link between organizations like Central Florida Animal Reserve and places in the world that do have tigers in their natural habitat.
Fun questions for you. Tell us about your most interesting experience with a tiger.
Well, Dr. Sir, I have a lot of experience. I'll send you one or two of my books in due course of time. Only one thing I would say is there are so many things, you see. With tiger or with politicians, with so many people I have a long association with tiger, there are amusing incidents which have happened. At the moment, I could recall one thing. I saw a python in Bandhavgarh when I was a very junior officer. This is in 1988, if I remember correctly. I saw a python devouring, swallowing a fawn, a spotted deer fawn. The mother was a little away scared, and the doe was cautious. She was thumping her four legs, and she was literally seeing the fawn being going inside the python. Within few minutes, I was an elephant back, and we were at a safe distance. My mahout told me, look what is happening. I didn't have a camera at that time as usual, so we saw this happening. Within few seconds, the python, of course, was immobile after the thing happened, ingesting this fawn. Within few minutes, there was some ruffling of leaves. A tigress came. She slit open the python, took out the fawn, she ate it.
Wow.
This is one incident I can never forget till I die.
That's amazing.
That is pretty amazing. Actually, I have a more, maybe a silly question, but one of the things we talk about here is that the urine from tigers smells like buttered popcorn, which is a weird thing. So I was going to ask you how you guys describe the smell of the urine of tigers.
Yeah, you're right. It's, you know, I see this, I mean, when the tiger marks, you see, I have experienced this a lot of time. When you open a you cook rice at your home, in your pantry, when you cook rice, you just open the rice cooker, you get a smell of the cooked rice coming to your nostrils, you know. I feel like that when a tiger marks. Okay. So that it's a musky, no good smell, but it's not an unpleasant smell. It's beyond our olfaction to perceive that, but I could perceive this as some ricey smell coming to me. And you say popcorn, so I put it as wheat rice, so it's something like a freshly cooked rice.
Okay, that works.
So in the last couple of minutes, you know, we have now over 2,200 tigers that have been reported now. What is our major takeaway that you'd like to tell our audience with regards to what's going on in tiger conservation and what this number means?
This number means more challenges, more gearing up for addressing the future, no room for complacency at all, more care is required. Though people say doubling of tigers and doubling of numbers, I take this as the carrying capacity, maybe another 300, that's about it all for India. This has thrown a lot of challenges in terms of, number one, corridor connectivity. We need to keep their ecological integrity so that gene flow happens. Number two, the human tiger interface that needs to be addressed so that the increased tigers don't get a pest value and people insist on capturing them and putting them back in some menagerie or zoo. The third one is to provide livelihood options which are sustainable ecologically to local people who in India are dependent on the forest resources. And then the fourth one I would say is the building of the capacity of frontline staff to handle smart patrolling so that the protection is geared up and there should be a proper staff development. The last one I would say is more close engagement amongst the TRCs so that the crime data is exchanged and there is a combined effort towards curbing the demand for illegal parts and derivatives of the tiger. That's about it also.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much for all the time that you've spent with us. And I hope that we'll be able to bring you in again to get more perspective on the progress taking place with the tigers in the wild.
My pleasure. Thank you, madam. Thank you, sir.
Have a good evening.
Good morning, doctor.
Yes, good morning to us. Yes.
And I will also take this opportunity to invite you to India and on behalf of the Global Tiger Forum, we'll facilitate that. Do let us know your convenience, please. It was wonderful talking to you.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
That was Dr. Rajesh Gopal speaking to us from his office in India. He is the Secretary General of the Global Tiger Forum, the group of 11 tiger range countries who are working together to find a solution to keep tigers in the wild.
CFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
Send us your thoughts. You can get us on email via contact@cflar.org.
Tune in again next week for more discussion. My name is Asla Gonser.
And I'm Simba Wiltz. Thanks for listening to CFAR Sounding. Thank you.